Jeffrey, what's that in your coffee cup?
What do you think it is, Jen? It's Death Wish Coffee. It's the only coffee I drink. Death Wish is the world's strongest coffee, and the world's strongest salesperson needs the world's strongest coffee.
Jeffrey and I drink it, and diehards, you need to be drinking it too. It'll help you wake up and smell the order forms. They have 100% no bullshit money back guarantee, so go get your first bag or first box of K-Cups of the world's strongest coffee at deathwishcoffee.com.
So what does an order form smell like?
Diamond cutting. If you find a diamond in the raw, what is it? It's a freaking rock. How does it become a diamond? You push it against the wheel to reveal the diamond. Life is that. And if you ignore the wheel, you will never polish the diamond.
Where do we start this? An answer doesn't matter. We're having a good time. Right.
He couldn't wait to get in here.
You need sales balls to make sales calls.
I'm tweeting that puppy.
Okay. Hi, everybody, and welcome to the premier podcast. That's a peepopper. In the United States and the world, Sell or Die. My name is Jeffrey Gittimer.
And I'm Jen Gluckow.
And I wrote the Little Red Book of Selling.
And I'm the founder of Sales in a New York Minute. What's up, everyone?
We are
that
going...
That was like our worst opening ever. We don't have to redo it, but like, oh my God, sorry,
guys.
Yeah,
I thought it was pretty good.
I don't know, it was weird.
I liked it. Anyway, if you're in sales or you're in business or you're a sales leader, this is the podcast for you.
Hell yeah.
Because it's going to give you insight, inspiration, and income. Those are the three things that people are really looking for these days to be able to make something happen. I'm going to have to decline this phone call that's coming in.
He just called me. Yeah, I know. I declined. Now I'll send him a text message.
Okay, cool. But So here's the deal. You are out there right now, and you're trying to make a sale. And today, we're going to talk about, well, we have, I mean, let's talk about our guest for just 1 second, okay?
That would be the one, the only Dove Barron.
Oh, my God. Dove Barron is freaking phenomenal.
I know. First of all, his accent is going to drive you nuts. And second of all, he's just a brilliant human
being.
Like,
nuts in a good way.
I totally loved my interview with him. He has zillions of followers. He's going to talk to you about something you're going to go, what's that about? He's going to talk to you about authenticity.
Yeah, and authentic leadership because, you know, sales managers and CEOs, you need to listen to this episode. But also, if you're a salesperson, you need authentic leadership too. And he's going to talk all about that.
You're just going to want to listen because the guy's so bright. I mean, he's going to talk to you about life and death.
Mm-hmm. He fell 12 stories and then, like, got into this depression.
Without
elevator. Who wouldn't, right? Yeah. No elevator. And he came back from that. And now I would say he's, like, 12 stories high. I mean, I don't know. He is freaking phenomenal. And he's also going to talk about success and how it comes from fulfillment. And I just think this is an all-around amazing episode, not just for leaders and CEOs, but also for salespeople, for your career and your life.
So, Jen, do we have any five-star reviews?
Oh, my God. We have so many five-star reviews, and actually not a pulled one for us to read today. It's from C.J. Layton,
who says,
I look forward... Let me start again. I look forward to listening every day to Jen and Jeffrey. They're entertaining and inspire me to be better. Great creative tips and ideas and great guest speakers.
Yep.
Jen and Jeffrey are great coaches and I learn something new every day. I love being a student of sales. I start my day with this podcast and listening has made me more money to better provide for my family.
Whoa.
Thanks, guys. Keep up the great work. You know, that warms my heart.
I know, I like that kind of stuff.
Mushy, but I love that kind of stuff.
I can just picture him coming home at night with all kinds of new little crap for their kids and having everybody jumping around as they play with their new dart gun or something.
But you know, But you know what? Like, you need to wake up and do something positive every morning. For me, it's reading. For me, it's writing. And for a lot of people, it's listening. And so I am so glad that we can be part of your daily commute, your daily gym, you know, wherever you're going, when you're going to the gym, your run, whatever. Like, that is just amazing to me. And one of the reasons we wanted to go 5 days so that you could get that daily inspiration.
Think about sell or die every day, because it's not just a Tuesday where you got to sell or die. Mm-hmm. It's every day that you got to sell or die. And if you don't, you're not going to earn enough for your kids. Or for your significant other, or for your car payment, or for your trip to the beach for the weekend, which is where we're going. But we have earned enough this week for our trip to the beach. Thank goodness.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm looking forward to the daily part of Sell or Die. We've come up with some ideas that are just absolutely phenomenal. We will crack 100,000 downloads next month, and it's so inspirational. It's not even funny.
And here's the thing. You guys know we have 2 guest episodes a week. We want to get you the best of the best guests. So if you could, please write an iTunes review, because that will help our ratings soar. More people find us and more amazing guests want to come on our show.
And you're probably going to want us to say, hey, dudes, get to the guest. So
Let's do it.
Dove Barron, rock the house. Dove Barron is the host of the TV show Pursuing Greatness with Dove Barron, as well as twice being cited by Inc. magazine's top 100 leadership speakers. His writings have been featured in the Boston Globe, USA Today, and Yahoo Finance, as well as the host of the Dove Barron's Leadership and Loyalty Show on iTunes. Diehards, say hello and welcome the great Dove Barron.
Thank you for having me. It's good to be here, guys. I appreciate you having me on your show.
It's
We're
a doggone pleasure. We both have genuine microphones, and I think that's an important part of this process. You'd be amazed. We just had an interview with somebody today that was wearing earplugs.
Happens all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. So has anyone shocked you as an interview?
As in a guest, one of my guests?
Yeah.
Nobody's ever shocked me, no.
And do you pretty much have control, or do people try to take over?
In the early days, people tried to take over all the time. It doesn't work at all anymore. So nobody tries to take over my show. I know exactly where I'm going, know what I'm doing. And it's full Monty. So we go raw and real and expose and just so. No, nobody takes over it. And we have a lot of fun.
So we should get our diehards up to date here. Before the show, we were talking about how you have a podcast that you've been doing for the past decade.
Yes.
So it was before podcasting was podcasting.
Well, what happened was a buddy of mine came to my house and he said, how do you feel about doing a podcast? I'm like, I don't need another job, mate. And he's like, no, I'll come to your place and I'll interview you for 20 minutes on a Monday morning. I was like, oh, I can do that. And that's kind of how it started. And that went on for like 18 months. And then it expanded and I ended up doing an hour. And then I started having some people who were interested in doing it. And then I got a radio show. So I had a radio show out of Seattle and out of Chicago. And then I just couldn't commit to a certain time of on a certain day, which is the hard thing with radio shows. So I went back to podcasting. And in that time coming back, podcasting has become huge.
No, podcasting has become the thing.
It is, yeah.
So talk about leadership. Did you start out as a leadership podcast?
No, it started out as a personal and professional development podcast in the early days. It was called the Mind Mastery Podcast.
Mm-hmm.
That's how it started out. And it was just understanding that to succeed in your life, you have to succeed by managing your mind. You have to understand how the mind works. I have a massive background in human dynamics, psychology of excellence, and a bunch of other things in that realm. And used to have a personal development seminar company that we ran a bunch of programs out of that was all my IP. So that's kind of where it started.
Got it.
And then it just, the natural elevation of that was I was serving leaders. So it only makes sense that the focus of the podcast would be leaders.
And did you use any other, did you have any influencers along the way? Napoleon Hill, Samuel Smiles, anybody who influenced you in terms of your early readings when you were studying?
Rabbi Concho?
Pardon?
Rabbi Concho? No. So I I've been speaking for 34 years, so my background, there's lots of people who influenced me. Certainly, I actually had LPs that were Earl Nightingale and Zig Ziglar, like LPs, for those people who don't know what that is, long playing vinyl records.
Yep, I have them too. I have the same ones.
Yeah, so, you know, I didn't think you'd know, Jeffrey, seeing as you're so young.
I am.
What those were.
Yeah.
Well, hold on. I have to turn the smoke machine off. It's blowing up my skirt. So I was influenced by all those guys. But originally, what I was influenced by was when I was a kid, I was a weird kid. My mom was thought I might be possessed. And so she shipped me off to the rabbis because I had these experiences. And I began to study Kabbalah when I was 7. And wow. Then from there, went on to study Prana Yoga when I was 11. And then traveled the world to study Vedanta, Hindu philosophy, Buddhism, Gnostic Christianity, lived with Buddhist monks and a Catholic bishop, Orthodox Catholic bishop, and the Tao, as well as Kabbalah. So studied the religious philosophies. That was kind of the background. And then from there, started studying the psychology and the psychology of excellence.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
So when you gave a seminar or you gave a talk, which obviously you've given thousands of them up to this point in time. Yeah. Do you have a general theme for it? Do you admonish the audience?
Everything we do is on purpose, about purpose. Mm-hmm. So purpose-driven leadership, driving purpose-driven organizations, creating purpose-driven cultures. And if we, you know, so if you, and it's something I've been speaking about for decades, but really now it's come to the fore because if you look at the list of what millennials want when they go and work for a job, it's meaningful work. Purpose is right at the top of the list. Mm-hmm. It's more important than money. And people go, well, who gives a crap about millennials? Well, here's the deal. Millennials are now 38 years old. They're in leadership positions. Mm-hmm. If you don't want to deal with millennials, you're out of business. Mm-hmm. Whether you want employees or whether you're looking at them as customers, you better know what their values are.
I understand that. And so when you talk to them about a leadership or purposeful leadership, is it something that has like three major points that you stress? You know, get to work and enjoy what you do, or get to work and try to get along well with other people. What are the benchmarks?
Have you got any more cliches you could just throw out?
No, I could have used more cliche words, but I didn't. I don't want to go down that hole, but
yeah, I'm pulling on your plunker, mate. Don't worry about it. I'm just kidding you. So okay. Here's the deal. So
thank you for saying plunker.
There'll be no extra charge for that. So the first thing that we talk about with purpose is that most people are looking for their purpose in the wrong place. So your purpose is not found in your passion. People mistake purpose for passion.
Hmm.
They go, I'm passionate about this. This must be my purpose. No, your purpose is not found in your passion. Your passion is a vehicle that transports your purpose. I'll give you the analogy I give all the time. It's not particularly politically correct, but it makes sense. And that you may have noticed that I'm not particularly politically correct. However, if you think of it this way, Jeffrey, can I ask you, are you a straight male?
Yeah.
Okay. When you were 15, 16, 17, 18, 19 years old, what were you passionate about?
Getting laid.
Exactly. So if your passion was your purpose and it was supposed to be your career, you'd have a job in gynecology.
Correct. Yeah. Right.
Right. So exactly. The thing about passion is it's transitory. It's a vehicle for purpose. But what we think is that this is my purpose. No, it's not. It's your passion. So you've got to make a distinction between the two. Your purpose is transported by your passion, but it's not revealed in your passion. It's revealed in your pain. You find your purpose when you're actually against the wall. Because when things are going great, you don't bother to look. You go, ugh, why would I change? It's all great. But when you hit the pain, when things go shitty, then you start asking the deeper questions of yourself. Like, why am I here? What's the point of this? That's where your purpose is found.
I love that.
And when you talk to younger people, Well, pretty much now everyone's younger than you are. But when you
thank you for that, mate.
Yeah, no problem. When you talk to younger people, do you tell them how to find theirs, or do you tell them how you found yours?
I do both. So, you know, I give my story of how I found my purpose because it helps people to see how it can be found. But I actually, you know, we have a process that we walk. We have an online program that the public can actually go through now. We never had that before. And we also do it with executives, and we do it with executive teams, and we do it with companies.
Well, tell us about
yours.
So
we have a process.
Yeah.
I'm sorry?
How did you find your purpose? Tell us about your story.
Well, as I said to you when we started, I moved to North America again in 1988, and I planned on moving to Vancouver for 3 years. That was my plan. But in 1990, I was going to move from there to LA, by the way. But in 1990, I was an adrenaline junkie. I was very successful. I was speaking all over the world. I was on TV, radio, newspapers, magazines. It was all going pretty great. And in 1990, as an adrenaline junkie, I was free climbing. That's climbing without ropes for people who don't know what it is. It's a sport for the moderately insane.
Mm-hmm.
And I fell approximately 120 feet.
Ooh. Ooh.
That's 12 stories and landed on my face and got smashed to pieces. Or as I like to say, I fell 120 feet from a self-imposed pedestal and landed on my ego.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I got smashed up. And of course, that made it sure I wasn't going anywhere for a while. During that process, which of course, as you can imagine, was incredibly painful and many, many, many reconstructive surgeries, somewhere between 10 and 12. Died several times in the process. But the first sort of 9 months when people would say, how are you doing? I'd say, I'm great. I'm coming back. Well, that's not exactly how I'd say it because my face was wide closed. So I'm great. I'm coming back. But that's what I'd say. And then, you know, I'd put on this, you know, I'm the tough guy. I'm the leader. You know, I can do this. But the truth of the matter was that I was darkly depressed when I was on my own.
Mm-hmm.
And on a particular day when I really had lost hope that I could ever find joy in my life again and feeling like I'd never be able to come back, even though that's what I was saying, I'd actually had a night out with my mates and I'd laughed and I was like in awe that, oh my God, you know, I finally can laugh. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize it could come back. And I walked in my door, I opened the door, and as I looked across the kitchen, there was garbage festooned across the floor. There was rotten meat wrappers. There were coffee grinds. There were empty cans. It was verstunken. It was not good at all. The whole thing was bad, along with litter box and all the rest of the stuff. And I knew exactly who the culprit was. It was this damn cat, this Siamese cat that I didn't like. It wasn't my cat. It was given to me. And I immediately went from feeling joyous to feeling furious and filled with rage. And I went looking for this cat and walked into the living room and the cat was curled up on the couch. And I'll be honest with you, it's shameful, but I lifted my hand to hit the cat. And as I brought my hand down, something in me stopped. And as it's like stopped midway, and I touched the cat instead. And I put my hand underneath it and the cat was cold and curled up and the cat was dead. And I picked the cat up in my arms and I fell to my knees and I began to weep. Not cry, weep, sobbed like that, sobbing. And out of these little lucid moments of like, why am I crying? I don't even like this freaking cat. What is this? And I couldn't stop it. And then suddenly I realized I was not crying for the cat. I was crying for the life that I'd lost, that was gone, that there was no back, there was only forward. And as I laid there on the floor in the fetal position, I knew there were three choices. Go back, which I worked out though that's not a possibility. The second choice, which was very seductive, which was stay here, be a victim of circumstance and just be, you know, oh, I could have been, you know, the Marlon Brando line, mm-hmm. I could have been a champion, but, you know, shit happened, so it's not my fault. Or move forward, how do I do that? And I began to ask, why am I here? That dark question, why am I here? What is the point of my life? What is the meaning of my life? It, you know, I had the success. I had the nice house. I had the nice car. I had all those things. But it doesn't have any meaning. What is the meaning of my life? And I began to question my purpose. And that was how I began that journey for myself. And over the next 9 months, I began to step more and more into that. So her first 9 months was a gestation period to give birth to the truth of the depression. And the next 9 months was a gestation period of stepping into my purpose and doing what it is that I'm here to do.
And obviously you're pretty good at it, or you would not have 900,000 downloads a month. People are listening for a reason. And the reason is that they are moved, or they are inspired, or they are informed in a way that they have not been informed before.
Yeah, and I'm very grateful for that. I mean, you know, my life is a life that I'm extremely grateful for. And the bottom line of it is, the thing that I'm most grateful for, that I say thank you for every single night and every single morning, is I'm grateful that I get to serve.
Cool.
And as a server, and people, please, diehards, which is what we call our listeners, don't misunderstand this. He is a server of humanity, not a server of food to other people in a restaurant.
No, I'm a servant leader.
Yeah.
I'm here to serve. As I lead, I'm here to serve. I'm not here to serve my ego. I'm here to serve the purpose of my life in helping others.
And in that help process, are you able to convey that in a way that others are inspired to help as well?
Yeah, it's the central piece. So here's the interesting thing, that when you tap into your purpose, you'll realize that you're here to serve. Everybody on the planet is here to serve.
Mm-hmm.
When you recognize that, then you're driven to certainly have a nice life and all the things that you want in your life, but you're doing it from a place of not just success, because success on its own, we all know, is pretty empty. We've all heard that. We've seen that. I'll give you an example. I had a guy walk into my office. He was recommended to come see me as a private client, as a one-on-one client. And so he paid for the hour in advance, as you have to. And at about 40 minutes, I said, we're done. And he said, what do you mean we're done? I paid for an hour. It's only been 40 minutes. And I said, I know, but we're done. The purpose of this first meeting is to see if we're going to work together, and we're not. And he goes, well, isn't that up to me too? I said, it is, but it's up to me as well, both of us. And we're not going to work together. And he goes, well, why are you saying that? And I said, because you can't afford me. And he said, what do you mean I can't afford you? Do you know how much money I have? And actually I did, because the person who recommended him had told me he's a billionaire. Right. And I said, you can't afford me. And he said, I've got so much money. And I said, I know. I said, let me just tell you a little bit about you. Can I do the psychic thing on you? And he said, okay. And now he's kind of like, he's pissed and he's a bit arrogant about it. And I said, you live in West Vancouver, which is the most expensive property in Canada. And he goes, yep. I said, you probably drive a Maybach, but if you don't, you drive the top of the line Mercedes. And he goes, yeah. I said, your house is on the hill, but you walk down into the main entrance. When you get in, there's a very large chandelier in the opening. And on the room on either the right or the left looks like a showroom. It's immaculate and perfect. But if you go past that and you go down some more steps, you'll actually be in the back part of the house, which is kind of hidden if you don't know where to look for it. And in the back part of the house, you've got family members living there, probably a couple of generations, and there's a lot of secondhand furniture. And the guy's jaw goes clonk. I mean, and he says, how do you know that? I said, because you're still poor. You know the price of everything and the value of nothing. I'm not here to feed your status or make you look good. I'm here to help you find your soul. That's the work that I do. And you can't afford that because you're too busy looking at success. Because after success comes significance, and after significance comes fulfillment from service. That's what I do.
And what did the guy do?
Walked out very pissed off.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Has he tried to come back?
It's interesting, because I've had a similar situation, and usually it goes the other way. The person goes, okay, hands up, I give in.
Mm-hmm.
My ego is, it's not going to win. Because it's an ego statement, right? So
totally.
Just challenge the ego. And very most often those people are like, okay, I'm ready. And we change the game altogether. But with him, his ego was just too big and he wasn't going to go anywhere.
Yeah. That's sad.
Wow.
It is sad. It is sad, because I want to help. I want to help somebody with a big ego.
Yeah, but he wasn't ready for help. You have to be accepting. It's like any other addiction.
Absolutely right.
He's
addicted.
Absolutely
right. You can't help people who don't. And here's the key. You can't. The saying is, you can't help people who don't want to be helped. That's not quite correct. Lots of people want to be helped, but they're not willing to be helped.
Right. Mm-hmm.
There's a great deal of difference between wanting and willing. So are you willing to do what it takes? You know, you guys talk about sales and all those kinds of things. I mean, you know that you can learn every sales strategy in the world and you can nail them down and get them fantastic. I teach people how to do them. You know, you can nail them. You can be fantastic. But if you're not willing to knock on the door,
yeah,
if you're not willing to ask for the sale, it isn't going to happen. Mm-hmm. So able and willing are vastly different.
Do you know the old expression that the hardest door to open in sales is your own car door?
I have not heard that. That's very good.
There's a reluctance factor that is in every salesperson.
Of course.
And you have to get it. If you can't get over the reluctance, you can never really win.
No, I've said for years, I believe there are certain skills in the world that you need. And I say, if I was sending a kid out into the world with guidance about what you should do and finding your own path, I'd say, here's the things you need to do. Go study improv.
Mm-hmm.
Learn to do that. Become a server in a restaurant and become a door-to-door salesperson.
Yep.
If you can do those three things, nothing will knock you down.
You're in Canada. Have you ever watched SCTV?
Many, many years ago, I saw the old place of it. I just recently interviewed the guy who runs Second City, which took a lot of SCTV's people.
Yeah. Hmm.
Kelly Leonard, who runs it, him and I are actually working on a project together.
It's cool. Arguably the funniest improv thing on the planet. It was scripted, but they often went off script in order to be able to make it a little more real.
Brilliant. Yeah. Truly brilliant.
Everybody, including you, including me, needs a little help, even if you have trouble admitting it. You know, it doesn't matter how long you've been in sales. The more you learn, the more you earn. It's just that simple. And if your sales needs help, it may be time to consider the Gittimer Learning Academy. It's the fun and easy and gamified way to brush up on sales fundamentals and learn some new advanced strategies to close the next deal. You know, sales, closing, that's what it's all about. Or creating the atmosphere where the other person wants to buy. We have hundreds of hours of lessons on closing, referrals, prospecting, you name it. You won't find a more comprehensive library of sales knowledge anywhere on the planet that you can actually use 1 minute after you learn it. Go to GittimerLearningAcademy.com today and sign up for a free demo. I love free, and so will you.
So your podcast is about leadership and loyalty, and you mentioned this term authentic leadership. Talk to us about that.
Thank you for asking. So authentic leadership is now a term that is thrown around. Here's the thing. If you and I go out into the local mall of where you are with a little clipboard and we ask 100 people, are you authentic? How many of them do you think will say yes?
100.
All of them.
Exactly. All of them. So it's a stupid statement so the problem is everybody's authentic because they believe that's who they are. But authenticity and in the context of authentic leadership is the number one most important thing of authentic leadership is self-knowledge. So you're an authentic leader because you engage in self-knowledge. You're self-inquiring. You're curious about yourself and you're curious about others. You stop going to the presumed thoughts. You start becoming more and more curious. So your authenticity requires you to have vulnerability, which is your greatest power as a leader and as a salesperson, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have vulnerability. And if you're, if you're as old as Jeff and I, then, we were conditioned to believe that vulnerability was a weakness, but it is actually our greatest strength. And I want to just give everybody a clue on this so you can really grasp what I'm talking about in the context of authenticity. I want you to think of somebody you know and put them on one side of you that is a good, loyal, trusted friend. Somebody you've known for somewhere between 3 and 5 years. Just imagine that person. Now, on the other side of you, I want you to imagine somebody you've known also for about 3 to 5 years. So you've known about the same amount of time, only this person is really an acquaintance. What is the difference between the two people?
Well, you know more inside of the friend.
Exactly.
The
answer is reciprocal vulnerability.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
We trust people we're vulnerable with. We don't trust people who are not vulnerable with us, and we're not vulnerable with them. So if you want to build a bond with somebody, whether that's an employee, whether that's somebody on your team, or whether that's a client or a customer, you have to have reciprocal vulnerability.
That's so interesting.
Yeah.
I've never thought about reciprocal. I consider myself vulnerable because I cry at movies. But I'll cry at kids' movies the way they end. But I wanted to go back to the authenticity thing. If I go to the mall and I say, are you authentic? And they say, yes, I am. And I say, well, have you ever lied to your mother or father? And they say, well, yes, I did. I say, okay. And I check the box and I go to the next person.
Do you think that means they're not authentic?
I don't know. I think that it's very difficult to brag about authenticity if you can't even tell your mom or your dad the truth.
I think that that's part of it. There's no doubt in my mind that authenticity requires telling the truth.
Mm-hmm.
But I will tell you, there's nobody on the planet who hasn't lied.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, nobody's inauthentic. Everybody's lied. I'll tell you the most common lie in the world.
I may have to ask you to step outside.
I'll tell you the most common lie in the world.
Yeah.
How you doing?
Fine.
Fine.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
F-I-N-E.
How's it going?
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. Fine. F-I-N-E. I don't know whether you have the E rating on air, so I'll say.
We do.
Okay. Fucked up, insecure, neurotic, and emotional. Yeah. That's fine.
Exactly.
I love that.
So it's just a big ass lie. That's what it is.
Yeah.
So everybody lies. We do what's called social lying, right? And that's an example of it. So I don't take you as inauthentic because you lie. Maybe you socially lie as part of the social agreement of the culture that you live in. Okay, that's fine.
Yeah.
If you go into France, what I care about is tell the truth when you need to.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's different.
Mm-hmm. There's an automatic reply, though. You say, comment ça va in French, and the other person will say, ça va bien.
Ça va bien.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Every time. Every time.
Yeah. Well, if you're in Canada and you say, how are you? People say, nice. Good.
Yeah.
You know, fine. But that doesn't, you know, if people ask me, how you doing? And I'm not doing fine. Do you know what I say?
Do you
really want to know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I know they're asking out of a social nicety.
No, the biggest lie in Canada.
Right, people ask, but they don't even really want to know.
They're not even listening for the reply.
Right,
exactly.
They expect you're going to say, I'm doing great.
Yeah, it's like a courtesy more than a question.
Exactly.
But the biggest lie in Canada is, how's that Tim Horton coffee? Oh, it's great, I love it. Seriously?
Okay,
Not guilty, my lord. Not guilty.
All right, let's go back to authentic leadership. I love this concept. How do you bring authentic leadership out in people?
Great question. And the answer is reciprocal vulnerability. So, and now please understand, when I talk about vulnerability, and this is the automatic jump for most people, particularly if we've learned that vulnerability is a weakness. So the mind works in polarity. So it's all or nothing in the mind. There is no middle ground. So you go, well, you know, I'm not allowed to show feelings. I'm not allowed to be vulnerable. Vulnerability is a weakness. And now I've been listening to Dove. Now I've been training with Dove. And I know that vulnerability is a strength. So I'm going to go into this meeting and I'm going to emotionally vomit on everybody. That is not acceptable.
Sad.
Yeah.
Not what we're talking about.
Yeah.
It's called discernment. So reciprocal vulnerability doled out with discernment. You have to be discerning about who you're delivering it to. I swear a lot. But notice I asked, do you have an E rating?
Mm-hmm.
I asked because I have to be discerning about, is this the platform in which I can, or do I need to, you know, counter that a little bit?
So we have reciprocal crass vulnerability.
Oh, God.
I love it.
I do too.
It's interesting, though. I mean, the people I engage with the most on social media aren't the people who pretend like everything's great all the time. They're the people who are vulnerable and say, like, I actually had this hard thing come up in my business, and here's what that looked like. Or, you know, they open up.
Well, the
exactly.
vulnerable ones.
You know, as I've said a lot of time on social media, your life does not exist on Facebook. Neither does anybody else's. Mm-hmm. And if you're comparing your life to the people on Facebook, it's like comparing yourself to a movie. It's not yeah. real. Everybody right. puts the best shit on Facebook.
Well, they do, but I think there's a shift now in that a lot of entrepreneurs are starting to be a little bit more vulnerable.
My feeling about that is this: they're willing to show their skirt or their underwear because they're looking for an answer, and that answer will help them out of a tough spot at the moment.
Yes,
whatever the spot is.
In the context of authentic leadership, let's just put it in the context of what you were just saying there, Jeffrey, because that's important. So, as a vulnerable, authentic leader, I go in and I'm the CEO, I'm the president, I'm the whatever it might be. And I go in and say, listen, we're dealing with this. And I know that traditionally you all look at me for the answer to that, but I don't have the answer. I mm-hmm. will tell you that I've been struggling with this. I've been thinking about it. I've come up with a dozen solutions that really don't work. So I'm giving it back to you. I'm saying I'm open to you. And I want you to know that I don't know the right answer. And maybe you guys don't either. But if you come up with one, we're going to beat that to death until we find out what is the right one. But I'm willing to admit that I don't know. And in the old school world of leadership, we were supposed to know all the answers. Mm-hmm. Now we go, no. So this is part of servant leadership, and it's also about flattened hierarchy. Is that like, I don't have to know everything. I'm there to actually be vulnerable and say, let's find a solution. Mm-hmm. I am struggling here.
Would you say
I have a board of advisors that I constantly meet with, and I say, hey, I don't know what to do here. Can you help me?
Mm-hmm. Would you say let's find a solution that not only works, but that people are in harmony with?
I don't really care about harmony. What I care about more is let's find out if we can find a solution that's aligned with the purpose of the organization okay. and all of our purposes. Mm-hmm. See, the interesting thing about being purpose-driven is it becomes this hard, fixed connecting between all of us. And so what it is like, yeah, I'm not particularly loving that particular course, but I love that it takes us this way. I love that it's taken us this. So you're really getting on my tits and I'm kind of fed up with you. Mm-hmm. And you're really getting on my nerves and I'm fed up with you. But we're all driving to the same destination. We're all driven by the same thing. So we're looking for a solution that gets us back on that road, which is our purpose. Hmm. Okay, that's what matters. It's not about harmony. It's about alignment. Because harmony, a lot of the times, is just some new age crap that people put out about, you know, we're all going to, you know, it's all. No.
Yeah.
Forget that nonsense. Mm-hmm.
There's no kumbaya. There's no sitting around the campfire.
There's no kumbaya. And people think purpose work is kumbaya work. It ain't kumbaya work. It is gritty. It's gritty mm-hmm. and it's a solid guidance in everything that you do.
So if one of our diehards or some of our diehards are inspired right now to find their purpose in a new way, where mm-hmm. do you recommend they begin?
Well, I wrote an ebook on it that's easy to grab and it's called One Red Thread. You can find that on Amazon.
Cool. I love that.
Yeah, I do love that.
So One Red Thread is there, and it talks about this single red thread that runs through your life, and it's there to help you with it. I also have, as I said, there's an online course, and you can find out about that by going to get the One Red Thread. It'll tell you how to find the course, or you can go to fullmontyleadership.com, and that will tell you too. But let me just help you right now without you buying anything or doing anything that I'm, you know, this is not about self-promotion. This is about service. So here's the thing I want you to do. I want you to make a list of the big events of your life, positive and negative. So the ones you think sucked and the ones you think are great. Okay? When you've made that list, what I want you to ask is this. When you look at the list of the crappy things, I want you to ask yourself two questions. The first question is, what was that there to wake me up from? So when I fell off the mountain and I was in the fetal position, I had to ask myself, what is this here to wake me up from? Which means that we're all operating in a kind of hypnotic dream and we need to wake up. We need to ourselves and we set ourselves up in life to wake ourselves up. So what is it there to wake me up from? It was there for me to wake me up from the fact that I was on an egoic pedestal. Okay. What is it there to wake me up to is the second question. It's not good enough to know what it's there to wake you up from, but also what is it there to wake you up to? What is it you have not been willing to see that's waiting for you?
So it's the opportunity.
We tend to get very focused on thinking, this is the way it is. No, no, no. You're looking in a narrow band. Instead of looking in a narrow band, look in a wider band and a far deeper band.
Got it.
Most people are living in what I call the numb zone. You know, you ask them, how's your life? Honestly, and most people are living life really at the upper end of 6.5, 7, and at the low end of 2 or 3. And they hate the 2 or 3, so they aspire to be between 4 and 7. That's called the numb zone.
Comfortably numb.
It's where I don't
numb.
Get to feel too much.
Comfortably numb, Pink Floyd.
Exactly. That's the theme music we used to play in the programs. We're trying to be comfortably numb because we're not going to be challenged there. But your life won't change if it's comfortable. You've got to get comfortable being uncomfortable. You've got to embrace the discomfort because that will reveal you. Some of my distant relatives, some of Jeffrey's distant relatives, maybe even some of yours, Jennifer, got involved in a trade that is big in Amsterdam, which is diamond cutting, right? Mm-hmm. And diamond cutting, if you find a diamond in the raw, what is it? It's a freaking rock. How does it become a diamond? You push it against the wheel to reveal the diamond. Life is that. And if you ignore the wheel, you will never polish the diamond. The shit that's happened in your life is there to reveal the diamond of who you are. You won't find your purpose by looking into the light, but by looking into the darkness. And as Joseph Campbell said, the treasure you seek is in the cave you fear to step into.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
So wake me from is your something in the past that was either weak or stupid or something that you did that caused you to fail, something that you did that was you were down your own wrong path. I have explained to people for years that I have an ever-present but extremely expensive guardian angel who tends to push me in the direction and with the wind at my back. So I sort of follow that, and that's how I got here. Obviously, it somehow got us together. But I think more important that where are you trying to go to is, are you willing to look at your opportunities and get out of your comfort in order to be able to take the opportunity that's in front of you?
Mm-hmm.
Everyone has opportunities. Very few people take them.
Well, you know, I'll push it a little bit deeper and further, sure, if I may. Being who I am and what it is that I do, I get offered at least one opportunity a week. There's no shortage of opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
It's to the discernment to know which opportunities to take. So you're right in that many people don't take opportunities because they're too afraid of taking the wrong one. I get that. I understand that. But when you're aligned with your purpose, you fall everything back through that filter. Purpose is a magnet. One end of a magnet attracts, the other end repels. That's what you want. So, you know, sometimes, until last week, I was juggling 7 opportunities and going, how do I do all these? And going, oh, I'm going to go mashugana with this. This is crazy, right? My freaking head is about to explode, and I'm going to have to work about 17 hours a day for the next 300 years just to do all this. It's not possible. So sometimes you've got to push some opportunities away. But it's not all or nothing. Again, that's the mind. So you've got to go to what is the opportunity that serves the purpose of my soul, the reason I'm here on the planet. There's always going to be another opportunity to make money, but if it costs you your soul, that is not an opportunity.
Agreed.
Mm-hmm.
If an opportunity is misaligned with your purpose, it's not really an opportunity. It might feed your bank account, but your soul may go bankrupt in the process.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I totally agree with that.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, there's all kinds of stories and movies about people that sell their soul.
Oh yeah.
And people have written songs about it. You know, pleased to meet you. Can you guess my name?
Right.
And the challenge that people have in that is that in our profession, the salesperson tends to go to the shiny object or the bright light. And that's not always the – they're looking for a shortcut. And I've just finished a book that where I recommend people take the long cut. Because if you take the long cut, it's usually a surer path. You get it day by day, not in a day.
Well, you know, what you just said there, Jeffrey, I think is incredibly important and people should pay attention to it because here's – you know, it really is the tortoise and the hare. And that is that the shortcut always ends up taking longer. I know. I've taken lots of shortcuts. I've made all kinds of balls ups, right? And I've tried to take the shortcut so many times, and it's always, always longer. And I've watched people who are, you know, who are my peers who said, no, I'm just going to go steady on, steady on, steady on. And they've like lapped me, me, know, in my 30s and even in my early 40s, lapped me because I was going, well, what's that? You know, I had SOS syndrome, shiny object syndrome.
I've had it myself. I still wake up to it sometimes.
And the discipline to come back to purpose. And just so, is this aligned with my purpose? Does this serve why I'm here on the planet? Or am I talking myself into shit? Am I making stuff up to tell myself that this is the right thing? Or am I actually being true? And for that reason, by the way, that is why you need coaches and mentors and guides. So, you know, I like I said, I work and mentor leaders who are very high-level CEOs, C-suite individuals, entrepreneurs, entertainers, artists, athletes, etc. You know, they're the best of the best. And the reason they're best of the best is because they get it. You've got to have guides. You know, the analogy I give all the time is this. Let's just go back 10 years ago. Who was the best golfer in the world?
Tiger Woods.
Tiger Woods.
Tiger Woods. Everybody knows the answer to that, right?
Mm-hmm.
How many coaches did he have at that time?
Five.
That's right. He had five coaches at that time. Five coaches. Now, hold on a minute. He was the best in the world.
Right.
Why
what
did he
you
have
need
five
a coach
coaches?
For? Yeah.
Because he had five coaches who were better than him at aspects of it. And for him to stay the best, he had to have five. Now, here's the next question. How many relationship coaches did he have?
None.
None. And what happened to that?
Yeah, exactly.
Golf club in the,
exactly.
window.
Yeah.
It was a bag of poo because he didn't have any coaches. So here's the greatest example. Yeah. If you have the coaches, if you surround yourself with the people who are the best of the best in what it is you do. So I serve many people who are far more successful than I am, but I'm the master of purpose. And you know, and it's not egoic. It's just the truth. I've dedicated my life to it. I'm the best in the world at what I do. I know that. My clients tell me that. And if you want to do purpose stuff, really digging into it, I'm the guy. And if you don't, that's okay. If you even if you want to do it yourself, go get One Red Thread, do the course, whatever it is you want to do, that's fine. I highly recommend it. I can't recommend it enough. But to be the best, you have got to surround yourself with people who can constantly assist you. So people are listening to this show because they want to be better at selling. And I listen, I'm going to be the first to tell you, it's great that you listen, but it's worth nothing. Absolutely nothing. I'm not insulting you guys. It's worth nothing. Information is worth the hole in the donut. Transformation is from application. If you take what Jeffrey and Jennifer are sharing with you, what their guests are sharing with you, and you put it in action, you can transform your life. But you are not going to become a better salesperson by listening to these guys for 14 hours a day. I'm sorry. It's great information.
That's
but
right.
It is
I
not
agree.
It takes 15 hours. Everyone knows it takes 15 hours.
Right, of course.
But that you're right with
you're right. You have to apply.
Yeah. If you don't apply it, you're a dead duck. So
this has been awesome.
Yeah, totally awesome.
Thank you for joining us.
And when
Thank
we
you. It's
come,
been a pleasure. I'm really grateful to be here. Thank you.
Cool. So are we. So obviously Dove has given a bunch of stuff. We're going to put all your things in the show notes. So you'll
Thank you.
Be able to get rewarded from people that are listening with both of their ears.
And ready to take action.
Yeah. And I should tell you that as the host of the show, I've taken notes maybe three times in the last 2 years and I have a page full of notes from you. So thank you
thank
very
you.
Kindly. And we will look forward to doing this again. Maybe we'll come on your show if you, you know, stumble around to have us.
Thank you.
Maybe someone will croak and you'll need a guest right away and I'll give you my cell phone. And I'll try to come on from wherever I am.
He's putting a hit on somebody on my list.
Exactly. But wholeheartedly, thank you very much for sharing this information today. It's been amazing.
Thank you, Jennifer. Thank you. Thank you, Jeffrey. I sincerely appreciate it. I'm honored to be here to serve you and to serve the audience.
Jen, I think the one thing that I would want to reinforce from Dove Barron, as brilliant as a guy that he is, he still has a coach. And he looks for people to help him and mentor him that pays for the services and is his own, in his own right, is a brilliant coach, in his own right, is a brilliant person with literally hundreds of thousands of followers. He's been through life's experience. He's been to the wall. He's faced death. He's come back from it. Think of all the amazing stories that he has told us in that short space of time. And he still has a coach.
You know, when you stop growing is when you think like, I'm the best at this now, so I don't need any coaching. I don't need any feedback.
Oh, I thought it was when you smoked in high school behind the football stadium. Well,
statute of limitations on that, folks.
But that too. But like, think about all the best sports players in the world, not just our country, in the world. How many of them have coaches?
Every one of them.
How many of them have multiple coaches?
How many of them practice every day?
Mm-hmm.
So think about yourself as a premier salesperson, as a diehard, and think about what do you need to do when you wake up in the morning besides having a cup of coffee, taking a shower, telling your kids that you love them and your wife that you love her and jumping in your car, or your husband that you love them, and jumping in the car and going to work and thinking that you get there on time. On time is a bullshit phrase that people use instead of saying, I'm prepared.
Yeah. When you're thinking about your coach, though, the question isn't, it shouldn't be, should I have a coach? It should be, who should coach me? Which coach should I have? And then every step of, you know, as you keep up-leveling and getting better and better, that coach may change along the way.
Now, not everyone is for you.
Right.
I will tell you that you're going to have to kiss a couple of frogs along the way in order to be able to find the princess.
Yes.
So
Well, you did.
Well, true. Yeah. that's a whole other story, Jennifer.
I just made Nada laugh.
No, it was a very expensive experience. I'll just say that. But
cheap now.
Jen, we have a different definition of the word cheap.
Yeah.
But I will say this, that oftentimes you receive advice from people and some of it is good and some of it is hurtful.
Mm-hmm.
And some of it's not good.
Right.
You have to be the determining person. However, do not, just because you don't like the advice, don't think it's bad advice. Because you may be on a wrong path and someone's trying to get you on a right path and you're going to go, yeah, that guy didn't know shit about what he's talking about. But he actually is giving you the wisdom that you need. You're just ignoring it. Mm-hmm. So always be prepared when your house is flooded for the helicopter that's coming to pick you up.
Moreover, you talk about it often, though, Jeffrey, about practice and repetition. These coaches will get you in the best practice.
Right. You do the fundamental things as you start your process. If you have a personal coach for training, that coach is going to start out with stretching. And they're going to start out with stretching every single time. You're going to go, shit, stretch. I just did this yesterday. No, stretch, you do that every day. When your dog wakes up, when your cat wakes up, the first thing they do is stretch. And they
do
it.
Downward dog.
When they do it instinctively.
Yeah.
We don't do it instinctively. We have to do it with an instructor who tells you exactly which muscles to stretch.
Actually, I got this this is going to sound weird. I got this ball.
I'll determine.
It's a vibrating ball. That's why it's going to sound weird.
There you go.
And it stretches your body like crazy. I'll post the link.
We're no longer G-rated.
No, it's like meant for exercise and physical therapy. Aha. And I'll post a link in our Facebook group. So if you're in the official Die Hards Facebook group,
see that vibrator.
It is. It is. Oh my goodness. Okay, so this is why it was going to sound weird. Sorry, guys. But it literally, like, it gets all your kinks out in the morning, and my trainer recommended I use it every day. It's amazing.
There's no way you can talk about a vibrator and not have it go south.
I'm so deep in that hole right now that I cannot get out.
Exactly. We will put a link to that vibrator in the show notes.
It's a vibrating ball.
Exactly. Yeah, it's a vibrating ball. That's what they all say, honey.
It's amazing. Yeah, but whatever. We'll just let it go.
Hey, guys. What's going on?
The vibrating ball. Satisfaction guaranteed.
Guys, what's going on in the rest of the week? Because I think everybody else that is just basically laughing at us and with us right now probably wants to know what's going on with us.
Okay. So for the rest of the week, we have a sales manager spotlight this week. I love those with Susan Harper, and she is awesome. And then on Thursday, you're going to hear from Weldon Long.
Love Weldon.
Oh, yeah.
The jailbird.
Yeah. But now, for now, it's time to say sayonara.
Au revoir.
Au revoir, and go out there and sell something.
Even if your ass falls off.
Sell or die hard. If you love the show, make sure you've subscribed.
And if you've subscribed, make sure you rate us on iTunes or give us a star on Overcast.
And if you've done all of that, tell a friend about the best sales podcast on the planet. Or better yet, tell both your friends.
And if you've done all of that, well, you're a true sell or diehard, and we thank you.